It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to day four of the Australian Open. This is Tennis Unfiltered. I'm James Gray of iNews.co.uk and the iNewspaper, as you well know. And I finally tracked down Calvin Betton. It's taken me 4 days. Calvin, I can only assume that you finally started enjoying Melbourne rather than hating being here.
There's some frustrations still, particularly the scheduling department today.
Yeah, you should literally be on court right now, right? And then what happened?
Yeah, well, we were meant to be fourth match on court three today, and the forecast for today was always for torrential rain in the morning, but it actually stopped raining earlier than the forecast suggested. I think the forecast was meant to be, it was meant to rain until about 3 o'clock, and it stopped raining at 2, and at 2 o'clock they sent matches on, and about 2:10 they cancelled our match, which I don't really see any logic in, because yesterday they had the same number of matches on that court, and they started at 11 and the last match went on at 7 o'clock. So if it would have followed the same path today, we'd have gone on at 10 o'clock. As it happens, I think the way the days progress, we would actually have gone on a little bit before 10 o'clock. I think we might have gone about 9:30, which is perfectly fine for a tournament with a night session and floodlights and what have you. So yeah, I'm a little bit frustrated. I think they've panicked too early. And I also, my main frustration is I don't know what when they did the schedule last night, I don't know what has changed since then. They knew when they put the schedule together last night, that it was going to be raining all morning, because it was 100% rain in the forecast, and they knew it was going to stop early afternoon, which it did do. So nothing really changed, then they just cancelled the match. And now you're a player, we don't know when it's now, 7 o'clock? And we don't know, there's no schedule out for tomorrow yet. So they could be on first thing, they could be on late on again, and it's not torrential rain, it's very gusty winds tomorrow.
And just for people who don't know, I mean, why are you so concerned about the wind? Not because your players are bad in the wind, but...
It's not because we're bad in the wind, it's because, I would say that Henry and Francesco are favourites in the match, and wind just makes everything more random. So it's just another random factor that I don't really like. I'd have preferred to have played on and a day with no wind. It just the better pairs, better players will usually win more when it's not windy.
Let's talk about the last couple of days, because obviously you've heard from me, you've heard from Eleanor, but you've not heard from Calvin. And actually, Calvin, I've been slightly surprised. You often talk about being a bit burnt out with tennis and not putting too much tennis into your day outside of your job. I've been quite surprised actually to see you watching quite a lot of tennis, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a bit different because I know a lot of people here. So a lot of people, I would say, my friends have been playing. So I'm going to try and give them a little bit of support and what have you. And, you know, British players, and then just try and have a wander around and see what's going on. I've watched a little bit. And then I've also been watching my other player playing in Thailand as well. So I've been watching matches on my computer when I get back. So, but yeah, there's not a great deal else to do here, actually, other than eat and watch tennis. I think I've found, and you can only eat so much.
Which I'm told you found as well, right?
The allocation of money at this tournament isn't as much as it is at the US Open or Wimbledon, to be honest.
But the food is... what was you were particularly raving about the other day?
What did I have the other day?
It was the tuna, right?
Yeah, the tuna was very good. And the seafood here is excellent. The lamb's been excellent, and the brisket's also really good. So, yeah, just finding a table is a bit of a problem. The actual restaurant, the players' restaurant here, is probably the smallest of... No, the French is the smallest, but Wimbledon and US... Wimbledon has two different restaurants, which is different, and, like, US Open's got a huge dining hall, so it's a bit easier to eat in there.
But, as I said, you have been, when you're not eating or sampling various seafoods, watching a bit more tennis than I expected. Anyway, we were both kind of on opposite sides of the court watching Draper... Yesterday, I suppose it would have been. I mean, you've known Drapes for a long, long time. How big a moment do you think that is in his career to get through a first five set, albeit not the longest one on paper?
Yeah, I think it's a big one. It wasn't time-wise, it wasn't long, but it was hot out there yesterday. It was roasting, and to come from two sets to one down, I think was quite a big thing. But I also think, you know, Jack's, he's just such a competitor. He's just hard as nails, and when he goes two sets to one down there in that heat, looking absolutely shattered, a lot of British players, past and present, you would look at and think, yeah, this one's done. Whereas with Jack, you didn't. I still made him favourite. I remember I said to whoever I was stood with when he lost the third set, I said, I still make him slight favourite here. And then there was a big 10 minutes at the start of the fourth set where... Giron had two break points on Jack, and I think Jack got a net cord to save one of them, and then I think Jack either got a net cord or a mishit winner to break Giron, and then the match just seemed to go away from Giron at that stage.
I guess it's amazing how these kind of fine margins, I mean, even just, it's not the same level, but we were watching out the back the doubles match between Nice and Zielinski and Sweeney and McCabe, and, you know, reasonably close set, goes to a tiebreak, and, you know, Sweeney frames a volley, and that's basically it.
Yeah, you find that, it's amazing how many times you find that happens, especially in doubles, and not, I think especially now in this doubles where you've got the normal scoring, you've got the normal juices and the full third set, that it just gives the better pairs a little bit more leeway, that there's less randomness that comes into it. All those kind of things filter in normally, but It's an interesting one, that one, that with Nice and Zielinski and McCabe and Sweeney, because McCabe and Sweeney have no track record at all of being anything like a doubles pair. I don't think they've done much as a doubles as individuals. And Nice and Zielinski are one of the best pairs in the world, and they looked in control for a while. Although I was told, I didn't realise that Nice and Zielinski were 4-1 up in the first set in that one, and blew the lead apparently. So.
And they did come back eventually and win in three sets, as I'm just seeing now on the live scores anyway. I should ask you before we maybe just look at some of the other results from today about Andy Murray. He's still here. He's actually hitting today with Michael Venus, filling in for his brother, I suspect, who's Michael Venus' doubles partner. Murray himself said, as we noted on the pod earlier this week, that this may well be his last Australian Open. Do you kind of concur with that, Calvin, or do you think that we might have another Murray U-turn along the line?
I think it entirely depends on the rest of the year. I don't think he knows. I think he's just speaking honestly there and realistically and pragmatically, going, yeah, you know, if results don't improve for the rest of this year, he won't be playing next year. There's, you know, that won't be a decision he gets to make. He won't. I mean, he'd get wild card, I guess, but. I don't think he'd want to be coming, if he just kept on losing, I don't think he'd want to come as a wild card next year. So, but then if results do improve and he starts winning some tennis matches...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the point is he's not particularly old, is he?
No, not for, you know, he's what, he's 35 or 36?
36.
Yeah, he's 36, and there's a few guys in the draw that are around that age. I don't think it's, you know, you wouldn't say he's specifically the veteran of the tour. So he could go another year, he could be back another year, so... Or it might be his last one, but I do think it will be dictated on results. I think the same with all these guys who we're talking about maybe retiring. And, you know, I think Federer was a bit different. His body just gave up on him. He couldn't play anymore. And I don't think Murray or Nadal are in that stage, but maybe Nadal's closer to it. Murray, actually, strangely, his body seems to be in as good a shape as it's been in probably half a decade, longer than that, probably in 8 years. But... he just can't find the form, he can't find the results, and I'm told he'd been excellent in training. I'm told he'd had one of his best periods of time in training, and then out of nowhere he put in a poor performance.
I wonder what we will see. I know he's due to play next in Montpellier, and then obviously he'll want to go and play Indian Wells and Miami. I mean, you know, it's not straightforward getting into those events. I'm trying to think of the size of the draw. I suppose he's probably still ranked just about highly enough, although he will lose a decent chunk of points.
And what did he do here last year?
He beat Berrettini and then Kokkinakis.
Oh, yeah, third round. So he's going to lose third round points, yeah. Yeah, I mean, getting in won't be a problem. He'll get wild cards wherever he wants one. But I think... I just think the belief just seems to have gone out of him at the minute. I think I don't know if he, when he's in those situations in matches, whether he believes that he can win. I think for a long period of time, maybe the last couple of years, it was always he thought, once I get back fully fit, I'll beat these guys, I'll be back winning, or I'm just playing shit at the minute, and once I sort my game out, I'll start winning. But now he looked to me like the other day that he thought that was just his game now. And I think that might be his problem, his belief, like having had, you know, 15 years of him believing he can beat anybody. And that's what he always had. He fully believed that he could beat Djokovic, Nadal, Federer at the biggest tournaments, on the biggest stages, and he's beaten them all at slams, beaten all of those perfect slams. And now, I looked at it the other day, he didn't look like he thought he was going to beat Echeverri.
Arena Sabalenka.
You may notice getting actual match calls, which is probably proof that we are actually on site in Melbourne. If nothing else, it would be quite something if I've managed to fake that. Let's look at a bit today. I mean, what's amazing in the men's draw is that I think only two seeds went out in the first round. Nicolas Jarry and the other one has escaped me. And that theme has continued. I mean, I don't know... We used to think of the Australian Open as a tournament that threw up weird results because it was early season and people often weren't fit. But I wonder now, because it's a hard court slam, it's the surface people are most used to, actually maybe the cream rises to the top.
Yeah, and it's a bit different because like you now have so many seeds as well. So I think like you usually get a lot of seeds going out. But like I don't think it's a massive shock that Jarry went out, you know, and that kind of thing. So. I think, you know, I don't think there's been any real what you call shocks so far. I don't know if we'll get any at all. I think, well, the one who's up for grabs is Tsitsipas, who's shown no sort of form recently. But then again, I said the other day I thought he'd be the big shock of the tournament going out early, but he does play well in Australia.
Mm.
He's made two finals.
He made a final here last year, of course.
Yeah, and I think he beat Federer here 1 year, beat Nadal here once in the final.
Yeah.
No, quarters, wasn't it?
Yeah, from two sets down, no less.
Yeah, being from two sets down, yeah. So he does play well here, but I'd be surprised if he makes his seeding position.
The one player I really want to talk out from today, or at least from the early match today, is Mira Andreeva, who, quite in the words of one listener, duffed up on the score. There's no real other way of looking at that scoreline. 6-love, 6-2, didn't even last an hour. I mean, there's a lot of young Russians coming through, Calvin. There's seven playing today. I think about at least half of them are going to win. I mean, she just looks nails, and she's 16 years old, and she just doesn't think about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she looks so comfortable in the environment. I see her walking around the restaurant and that kind of thing. She just looks very, very comfortable. I think she knows that she's very, very good.
Mm.
And again, it's like we do seem to be having like another wave of Eastern Europeans coming through again, not just Russia, I think. Like, you got Prismic, who the other day had Djokovic on the ropes, and he did. Like, Djokovic just came through it, but halfway through the third set, I think, Djokovic was wobbled. I mean, he was telling the crowd to shut the F up and that kind of thing. And then I've no doubt that in about a week's time, he'll be talking about how he's no idea why he's not as loved as Federer and Nadal. Again, I don't mind him doing that, adds to his character, but don't seem shocked when the crowd don't give you the same love as they do for two guys who definitely would not do that.
I was asking you earlier, you know, who you knew around the kind of the Russian tennis, and it seems actually Russian tennis is a little bit not removed from the tour, but people tend to run in
I think the thing is there's so many of them that they don't they don't have to socialise outside of their group.
Yeah.
You know, they do
can
tend
hit together,
to.
If you go together.
If you go down the restaurant, there's three massive tables, and they're usually taken up by the Russians.
Mm.
I think the top guys do. I think, you know, Rublev's obviously very popular on the men's tour.
And Dud doesn't live in Russia, yeah, and you know, he sort of extracts
You know, and he's mates with Hatchinov and that kind of thing. And Medvedev, I think's a little bit more friendly with most people, except for one in particular. But other than that, you find that they tend to stick together.
Hmm. And I guess what you're really seeing here is kind of what you talked about in terms of your own development. What I know Matthew Syed, for example, has talked about in terms of all the best table tennis players in Britain at one point coming from the same street. It's that there's a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy, I suppose, that you get one or two good players and it breeds two or three more, and then you get this almost this generation growing up together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not over the moon about comparing me with Matthew Syed. I think talks a load of bum for most of the time, but yeah, there is something to be said. Although I think that when he said it was more about location, and he did have that was legitimate that if you live, I think it's the same with tennis. If you live down the road from a tennis club, you've got a more likelihood of making a go of it than you have if you live 45 minutes from the nearest tennis club.
Sure.
But yeah, it's the same as having, you know, if you look at a lot of top players, a lot of them tend to have a sibling who is just a little bit older, who they can do a lot of hitting with on the way up.
Mm.
And I think that certainly helps. And again, like, although we say that, James, but with Russia, it's that big. I'm not sure it actually makes a difference. You know, if you go that there's 10 players coming from Russia, then that's like the same as like one coming from Western Europe, isn't it? Like,
in terms of population.
But I do think like Moscow is like a lot of, you know, there's a lot of players there. Actually, the other day I was talking to me and Henry were talking to a player who was telling us, I won't name the player, but they were telling us that they were looking for a coach and a hitter. And the player was from the Czech Republic and wanted to live in Prague. And that player was going, you know, there's just no one around in Prague to hit with and practice. And at the time, I remember I was like, you know, it was a female player. I don't mind saying it was a female player. And I thought, if there is anywhere on the world, on the planet, where I think that you're talking rubbish about there being no one to hit with or train at, it has to be Prague. And it led me to believe that this player didn't actually want to find a coach or a hitter. They wanted to just moan about that they couldn't find a coach and a hitter.
Right, that makes sense. Let's have a little quick look forward to tomorrow, because there are four Brits, in fact, playing tomorrow. Jack Drake, we've already discussed. Cam Norrie's up against Zepuri, a qualifier who he's actually lost to before. And then on the same court, we've got Bolter against Tseng and Raducanu against Wang Yifan. I mean, four matches tomorrow. Draper, I've not mentioned because I can't remember who he's playing. Isn't that terrible? That's right, Tommy Paul.
He'll beat Tommy Paul.
If he's pulled up all right.
Yeah, I think he will have. I don't think that was physical yesterday. I think you said, James, that he said in the press conference that it was more a stress thing. I think he'll be fine. And I don't think he's going to be that hot tomorrow, apparently, so he'll beat Tommy Paul, I'm very, very sure. He beat him last week, didn't he? Beat him pretty easy.
Yeah, definitely.
Please go to the match for your escort to six.
Norrie, that's a tough one. Zepieri can play. And I tell you what, as we saw earlier, James, there is a lot of Italian fans here.
Yes.
Like, they will rival. There's a lot of Colombians. I saw that I was on Kier Arena the other day to see Kubler play against Dominic Galan.
Daniel Galan.
There is a Romanian like called Dominic Galan. But different spelling. It's double L, I think. And there were as many Colombians in the crowd as there were Australians.
Wow.
But the Italians, they're hunting in packs, as they always do, and they're loud. So, I think Noz is going to be. He'll certainly not have the crowd on his side tomorrow.
But I think he'll relish that as well. Like he's someone who does enjoy that, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think he bothers him. I think it's more that he doesn't bother him. You know, he's like, he'll probably not even notice.
No. The other two matches involving Britain versus China. It's the great geopolitical battle on 1573. Bolter against Tseng and Raducanu against Wang Yifan. I mean, on paper, they should potentially, well, I think Tseng is a tough match for Katie.
Yeah, I think you'd make them both. I don't know much about the two Chinese girls. I know them a little bit, but I think you make both. You make Katie favourite, I think. Emma, we just don't know where she's at.
Mm.
Just looking outside, she was outside about 10
yes,
minutes
ago. Yes, I was going to say that. That's where she's at.
Yeah. But I don't know. You know, I think it's impossible to know where she's at on that. I don't think the other night told us a great deal.
No.
Last night, I don't think told us a great deal, because it's probably the best draw she could have had.
Mm.
In terms of fitness of opponent and that kind of thing. But so, yeah, I'd be interested to know that.
And if she picks up two wins, I think that's mission accomplished, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's two wins and then going and playing the next tournament.
Yeah.
that would be mission accomplished, not taking 4 weeks off. You know, I think that's the key thing.
Sure. Well, Calvin, thank you very much for taking the time. Nice to track you down at last. I can only apologise for the technical difficulties and the calls that we've had for players. We're now being called, Calvin and I, to go and find some dinner, which is the most important thing in my diary. That was day four. I might drop in a bit later with some Djokovic news. He's got Alexi Popper in a little bit later on. But if I don't, then please do come back tomorrow. Sports Social Podcast Network.